Huey, I don't want this to be an interview in the ordinary sense of the word. I would like to give you the opportunity to say whatever you have to say. Your trial, I believe, is slated to start on the 10th. And once the trial has started, the whole relationship between you and the outside world will in some way change. And what I would like you to do is use this as an opportunity, if you wish, to make a full statement. If you wanted to divide it between things that you are addressing to the black community and things you'd like to address to the white community, then that's all right, too.
I think that it could be interwoven in the complete conversation instead of making, directing statements to the black community and then the white. We could direct both of them at simultaneously.
Fine. Well, I expect that you had enough people ask you about your personal involvement in how it all got started and so on. Do you want to go into any more of that?
Well, I think that most people are aware of the start of the Panther, but I could explain or recapitulate, because many people get the wrong view of our organization, that the Black Panther Party is a political party, and that we have a political platform and definitely a political aim, that our aims and goals are liberation of the black community, freedom of the black community, and in short, political power of the black people, which we don't have at this point. And we feel that black politics have been mishandled for many years. Matter of fact, it's been mishandled ever since black people started to engage in the so-called American politics. And this was after the Emancipation Proclamation and black Reconstruction. Black people have been misled as far as the definition of political power, that during black Reconstruction, many black people were led to believe that to have a political representative in office would mean also political power. The Black Panther Party has found that this is not necessarily so, that the only way that one can have political power is to have a strong base behind him, and the people are the backbone of this power. But during black Reconstruction, where we had some black representatives in Congress and representatives from many of the southern states where most black people were, they were engaging in the politics that was actually somewhat absurd, because they were representing a people without power. And to explain this, that we would have to examine the nature of the black people's, the black masses' situation in the South at that time. After Emancipation Proclamation, that black people were offered, or promised rather, land and equipment so that they could provide for themselves. And of course, this land was never given. And in effect, all we were given was these political representatives that were supposed to seek rights and freedom for black people. These political representatives were non-effective for the simple reason that no one had to listen to them in the political arena that they were operating in, because they couldn't offer a political consequence. After they expressed the desires of the people, there was nothing more done. Simply, if the demands were not met, because the people didn't have control of the land or the means of production at the time. So the people, the other people, the white people in the political arena, had a power behind them because they owned land, they owned tools for production, and thereby they controlled the land. And these white politicians, when they didn't get what they wanted, or if the people didn't get what they want, whom they represented, then the people would act in such a fashion to deliver a consequence to the general society. And they would do this by not cooperating in, say, some industrial area, or at the time, some feudal area, farm area. The farmers, if they didn't feel that they were treated fairly, they simply wouldn't sell their goods on the open market. They would let their foodstuffs rot in the field and try to convince the other people of society that they should be heard. Black people were unable to do this, so they were left at a level of a beggar, because the political representative who was supposed to be representing us would demand certain rights, and after he didn't receive it, that people were forced to be mute because they didn't have the tools to deliver this consequence. Well, this went on for some time, and finally the very political representative was ousted out of office. And after he was ousted out of office, black people in general remained in primarily the same position that they were in before he went into office.
In fact, they even quit voting, largely.
That's right. They were disillusioned with the political arena completely, and rightfully so, because while the black intellectuals at the time and the representatives, many of them were very equipped. They had been educated in Canada and France and so forth. They were more educated than many of the white people in the South. So the people were disillusioned, the mass of the people were disillusioned with the political arena completely. And matter of fact, they had some reservations about it in the first place. While the black intellectuals and politicians were going around saying that we would get freedom through the vote, black people were chanting, in the days of Jubilee, we'll have 40 acres and 2 mules in the days of Jubilee. And so the people seemed to always recognize where their real power was located. It was the black bourgeoisie, or the black intellectuals, who were deceived. After this, after black people were put out of the political arena, we were in pretty near the same position as we were even before slavery. Matter in some instances even worse, because we were totally unemployed. And when we were enslaved, we were taken care of, if you can say taken care of, that we did get some food and we did have a shack to sleep in. But after the white people, the Southerners, didn't need us anymore, we didn't have any place to go. So black people started to come north to the promised land. But to skip a period of time now, I would like to make a correlation between the current happenings, and it seems that history never plays itself over again, repeats itself, but there are many similarities in things that happened in the past and the present. And I would like to point out Adam Clayton Powell being put out of office in New York. And the people of Harlem, because they have very little control, or matter of fact, no control over any power area. And the power can be really divided, or you can analyze in a couple of areas. You have economical power, or industrial power, and you have feudal power, control of land, and military power. According to John Hope Franklin, that the reason black Reconstruction failed was because of a lack of economical and military power. Matter of fact, shortly after the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln was very much afraid that if he didn't disarm the black people, that we would engage in guerrilla warfare and really gain our freedom, or attempt to gain our freedom. So we were disarmed. So even at the present time, we lack economical power, feudal power, and military power. So we're left in a position as beggars in the political arena. Even up to this time, that after Adam Clayton Powell was kicked out of Congress, the black people could do little more than voice an opinion about it. And if we were in control of economical power, or even military power, we could have engaged and caused a political consequence for the general power structure. But because we've never had this power, there's been little progress as far as towards freedom. At this time, the Black Panther Party has realized the nature of power, and we say that power is the ability to define phenomena and then make it act in a desired manner. The Black Panther Party has attempted to erect a power base by educating the black community to what real power is about. And as we analyze it, it is impossible now for us to compete with the enterprises and the people who control the industry, simply because these people gained their tremendous power through exploiting us in the first place. Slave labor was the cause of the production or was the creation of the industrialized North. The land that we were supposed to get, I understand, the Standard Oil and some other big monopolies received that land. And of course, some white Southerners also shared in stealing this land from black people. So the Black Panther Party says that we can't compete with the people who've enslaved us to gain their wealth, not economically. And of course, no one is going to give us any land. And so we're left in a situation of having but one choice. And that choice is that we are going to gain political power by any means necessary. And when we really boil it down, we see that we only have a few means. And maybe, as we see it, there's really no alternative. The black community will have to arm itself in a political fashion and be a political threat to this power structure. So we have the power of potentially being destructive to this country. The trend is now that when black people are brutalized, when black people are exploited to such an extent that we can't stand anymore, you see a physical reaction. And this is in keeping with Chairman Mao's statement that political power grows through the barrel of a gun. And many people think this is ridiculous. But no one has presented any program to compete with this capitalistic power structure and been successful in trying to convince them at a conference table that black people should gain freedom, equality, and justice. Matter of fact, that up until the time when black people started to take to the streets and destroying property and destroying means of production, that we're focused on now, and we're heard. And we're heard simply because this country only understands power. The whole country was erected upon power. So white people who are in control know very well what power is about. We say that black people should give some consideration to the amount of strength that we have latent, that if it were developed, then we could negotiate, because concessions would be made when white America sees that black people will no longer take no for an answer. People are always very concerned, especially in America, because it's basically a materialistic country. They're very concerned about the safe keeping of their property that they've stolen and the freedom that they've stolen. If they see that their very existence rests upon the freedom of black people and all people, matter of fact, then I'm sure they'll make some concession.
The Black Panther program, and in fact the program of all black organizations in varying degrees of intensity, it seems to me, are demanding a fundamental change in the setup of our society. It's always seemed to me that the black community was the only community in this country where there was enough actual pressure to produce, or spearhead at least, any revolutionary change in this country. And I see the enormous change in the temper and the type of subject that black people wish to discuss. When I first was at the microphone 11 years ago, I got nothing but the nonviolent types out of the South who talked about God and brotherhood and being allowed to sit down at lunch counters or ride in buses. And I kept wondering how long it would be before they would speak in different terms. Now they speak in different terms. And it seems to me that what you're asking for, see, people are so hung up on this business of somebody's got a gun, that they are not really thinking beyond that, many of them, to the other points that are in the program of the Black Panthers. Because it's a revolutionary program. If every cop in Oakland dropped dead tomorrow morning, it wouldn't change the bad housing, it wouldn't change the lack of jobs, it wouldn't change the rats and the poor health services and all these other things that the ghetto population puts up with. Now, you know, it seems to me that what you're asking for is revolutionary change.
Yes, before you have any change, first black people have to gain political power. And this is why that I thought it's very necessary to explain where and what this political power is, what stuff is made of. Of course, as far as the general structure is concerned, the general structure is an exploitive structure, starting with the enslavement of black people for the profit gain of the power structure. And they used us until they didn't need us anymore, and then they gave us a so-called Emancipation Proclamation, which really was an unemployment pass, and that we remained unemployed until about World War I, where white soldiers went off to fight, and they needed us in the factories to again exploit us, and we became skilled, and they made very much money off of our skills. And the soldiers came back, and they didn't need us in the factories anymore, and we became domestic servants and janitors again. And after a while, they didn't even need us for this to any large degree, and we became unemployed again. So the very nature of society with the greed for profit, the system where the administrators, the ones who really control the government, remember, not the government administrator, but the people whom they are representing. And they represent power blocks. They represent industrial blocks. They represent people who own land, people who own property. Black people have never, it hasn't ever been in our best interest, and we haven't ever gained anything by the capitalistic system. While capitalism, and when you think of capitalism, you always assume the theory of free enterprise, where one person can compete with the other, and that he has just as much right to, if he works harder, he will gain more land and more money. And this assumes something else, that the people will have this freedom to compete with each other, or the free enterprise theory, that black people have never engaged in free enterprise. When the move was to the West, that black people were slaves, and that when the cowboys and the frontiermen were staking up land to compete with each other, that we played no part in this. The only part we played in was to make it possible for them to engage in free enterprise. So free enterprise and capitalism has only been destructive to black people, and we're demanding a drastic change, a revolutionary change in the basic structure. And within our platform, it's explained that first, that to be born in any country, and to be born in this country, that the man has a right to live, and to live, he's going to have to provide for himself and his family. So therefore, it's up to the administrators to provide him with work, and it has nothing to do with the amount of education he has, because then that would be a very cruel discrimination, as they do today. The man who's uneducated, he doesn't deserve to live. This is the line of thinking I guess they operate upon. The man who's educated, he deserves to live. And then if you analyze it further, you'll see that the man who's right, job historically for this living is a man who ends up with the advantage, and the people who are the victim who made it possible for him to be put in this situation of learning were the people that he exploited for his own personal interest. So the Black Panther Party demands full housing, decent housing rather, that's fit for human beings to live in. We demand full employment. This country with this system, with the institutions that it has, and that's private property and capitalism or private ownership, has proven that either they won't give full employment or they're not, they can or they just won't. They're not interested in it. But as far as what are we going to do about this? If people are afraid, I don't believe that most white Americans are really afraid of guns. If it was really so, if the majority of them were afraid of guns, then they would demand that their armed forces be disarmed, and that their police officer, which is actually the local army, be disarmed, and the National Guard be disarmed. But they only become afraid when the victim starts arming himself, and in a political fashion. And as far as the demands that we say and how we go about this, as far as the power that we're going to develop, that we are developing, I think is in keeping with all colonized people. And we are colonized people. We always have been. And now we're sort of in a decentralized colony, because with the Black community spread all over the country. But nevertheless, we're treated as other people in foreign countries who are colonized. The establishment acts very much like the colonizer, and uses us for his interest whenever he wants to, and our work never benefits us. It only makes him richer. But in these other countries where people have sought to gain their freedom, they went about it in a way so that they could first gain power within the people, and they didn't go around talking about trying to persuade the explorer to change his ways. But perhaps they did it for a time, as we have done it for a time. But they armed themselves and they toppled the explorer, and then they administered a system that would be beneficial to most of the people. And there was no real contradiction between them tearing down and rooting out the system to place a new one. As far as your statement that if the police were driven out of the community, there would be no change, I doubt this seriously because of certain things that's happened in other countries. For instance, in Cuba, where a few armed men with Fidel Castro and Che Guevara went into the hills to change the general structure. And when they drove Batista's army out, who was aided by America, and thereby driving America out, they did change their system. So they did get decent housing, or they're attempting now to get more housing for the people. They are creating the educational system that's beneficial to most of the people. What kept them from it? Nothing but the gun of the reactionary army that was in the puppet government that was actually put there by America and supported by America. As America supports many puppet governments, as they support the puppet government of South Vietnam. So I'm inclined to believe that if the might, if the force is taken away, or if the force is matched in, through some strategic means, where it would be very difficult for the local, national authorities to deal with the Black community, then the change will be at hand. But before this time, before we develop this power, then we'll remain at a begging stage, because as soon as they disagree with us, they will simply send in their police force and their National Guard, and then, as they did in Detroit, their 82nd Airborne. So it seems to be a trend that power understands power, and that without this understanding, I don't believe there will be any change in this country.
But that change would bring about revolutionary changes in the structure of our society if it could be achieved.
It definitely will be for the simple reason that if the Black Panther Party has anything to say about it, that we realize the defects of the system now, and that matter of fact, the corruption of the system, and we realize that the whole institution and the system must be destroyed and replaced with a new one. And we talk about decent housing, and within the platform we state that if the private landlords will not make decent housing for us, then we will nationalize the housing and make decent housing for ourselves, and we will then put pressure upon the national government authorities to aid us in this.
Do you see any natural or even necessary connection between the black movement, the black militant movement, and the other black movements, which in a sense are saying the same thing, but perhaps not coupling it with quite as outspoken a position as yours, and the white radical movement?
I say that liberation movements in general are saying primarily the same thing, that we want freedom and that we're demanding an equal share of the wealth. But in many cases, I think that many of the groups don't understand the problems or the that we'll have in operating within this American system or this capitalistic system. Many of the groups believe that we can gain freedom within the structure as it's organized now, and it's no need to change the general system. I think this is a basic difference between the Black Panther Party and some other militant groups, and I think that's it's a matter of education for this group. The Black Panther Party is also an educational vanguard, that we are attempting to educate the black militants and the black freedom movement in general, and also educate the white revolutionaries of the mother country, who many of them are sincere in their quest for freedom and justice. And many of them don't understand what we'll have to do to gain this freedom, and nor do they understand the changes that will have to be made in the general structure. So we attempt to educate these other groups and these other parts of the community, so that they will have a clear picture of what will be necessary to gain our freedom. And when I say that black people are arming themselves, I don't mean to imply that we're arming ourselves to go out, say, tomorrow and tear down the American structure. What we are doing is very similar to what countries such as Vietnam with the National Liberation Front, countries such as China, I would like to explain the relationship that goes on between China and, say, Vietnam and America. Number one, the Vietnamese people don't have any illusion of defeating America as far as tearing America down or capturing many American prisoners, and this is not their victory. Their victory is any time that America stops oppressing them and pulls out of their country. And the dialogue that goes on between China and America, China says that, well, we have a thermonuclear blast and that we know you have it also. So either you will give some consideration to the people of Vietnam, or else you'll suffer a political consequence. But nothing happens. It's sort of a stalemate that China doesn't drop any bomb, because America realizes China's strength, that she has the potential to do this, and also China realizes that America has a potential to cause a great hurt to the people of China. So there's a stalemate, but so either you have to inflict the power, or it's what I call flexing the power. You have to let the power structure know that you have this ability, to cause this consequence for them. And when black people start letting the power structure know that we do have this ability to deliver a consequence if we don't get our freedom, then perhaps there will be some changes made.
But the kind of sporadic and spontaneous violence which has happened and which is expected to happen again is not the kind of self-defense and building of a power block that you are basically talking about, is it?
No, I'm talking about something in the line of what the Vietnamese people talk about. The Vietnamese people are armed strictly for self-defense, and if it were left up to them, they wouldn't fight a single day, I'm sure, because they're suffering a great hardship by having to engage in warfare. But they've worked out a strategy where that even though America has a great technology and a great advancement in the military weapon, they offset this because with the strategy that they have developed, which is called guerrilla warfare. As far as this country is concerned, I've heard many of the government officials and corrupt local officials talk about, well, if black people are going to attempt, what they're saying in essence, if black people are going to attempt to gain their freedom by force, then they're just going to suffer for it. They seem to think that black people will continue to go out and try to match arm for arm, that black people are learning now through the education of the Black Panther Party and other enlightened revolutionaries. The way to victory is a long one, and it won't happen with trying to match the technological developments that this country has. As far as the spontaneous riots that the Black Panther Party stands against is, at the present time, and when I say at the present time, because, well, number one, we've observed other people getting their freedom, but in this country, we run into a situation that's different than any of these other people, or as far as the Latin American Revolution and the revolution in Southeast Asia. The terrain is much different, that the people, it's basically undeveloped countries, and it's not an urban country. And here we have the problem of engaging with the power structure in an urban situation, and we don't really have any blueprint to go by, because it hasn't ever happened in an urban country for some time. But as I've read that the French Revolution was, I think, could be considered somewhat of an urban revolution, where France fell and the bourgeoisie fell, and it was similar to an urban riot in this country. And I understand that the masses of the population was very unorganized. But their quest for freedom was so strong until, and they were unified in this quest, they went out and literally tore the foundation out of France and the ruling class at the time. So as far as the future of our revolution, I don't know what turns it will take, but at the present time, I would advise against the spontaneous riots. And one way that this can be done is through publications that our party has, a weekly paper, the Black Panther is called, and we teach the correct methods for liberation within the paper. And we see that there's much need for direction, and we attempt to give this direction to the revolutionary people of America.
I've been told by many people from the South that in wide areas of the South now, the people are universally armed, and yet there has been no overt attack on the white community, but that nevertheless there are boundaries which the white authorities no longer attempt to cross, and in the meantime the organizations are attempting to work in some way within the structure. A spontaneous riot, for example, that might be precipitated by, you know, anything, whatever, in Detroit, in Oakland, in Harlem, might in fact at this stage give the police and the authorities the opening that they are waiting for. And at this stage, perhaps the strength of the militant aspects of the black movement could be wiped out.
I doubt very seriously whether the black movement for freedom can be wiped out. To do this, you would have to wipe out 30 million black people or more. So as far as the leaders, leaders come and unfortunately leaders go. Leaders are assassinated, murdered, but yet the black people march on. And as far as our fear of being wiped out, we have no fear whatsoever of being wiped out by the power structure, because we realize that, as the saying goes, you can kill the dreamer but not the dream. And so we feel that our teachings will go on, and if people will identify with the party's leadership, this is what we ask for. If we can instill or project a philosophy that is acceptable to the people, then we will serve our purpose. As far as the police waiting for a chance to come into the black communities, they had a chance in Detroit, and they did just that. They slaughtered people and Watts, even in Oakland here, Newark, and they've come in and they've slaughtered people, and by them slaughtering people, which was very unfortunate, but they raised the consciousness of many people. The people realized what danger that they are in. In many cases, there was a positive effect as far as the people who survived the slaughter by the armed forces. And what it did, it promoted the consciousness, it lifted the consciousness of the people, and also it taught them, it was sort of a dress rehearsal of, taught them, if nothing more, what not is to be done, what not to do, and that is to go in the streets in a very organized fashion and be sitting ducks for the military to shoot them down. And I think that everyone will agree that what happened in Detroit was much more sophisticated as far as maneuvers on the people's part than what happened in Watts. And Detroit learned from Watts. And that's one of the reasons that the Black Panther Party are activists, that we realize that black people are either illiterate or semi-literate, the masses of us, and that we don't read very much, even though certain tactics are laid down in literature, but because we're not a reading people, that we don't observe, but we do observe activity, and we're educated by our mistakes. And every time that there's rebellion, there's things learned by the black community in general. And I think that this is not only true of this country, it's true of every other country where a resistance and even a successful revolution occurred. One of the reasons that you have a small group of people like 12 men in Cuba who went to the hills. Those 12 men, I'm sure, they realized that they couldn't topple the corrupt government of Cuba. But they also realized that the people were illiterate. They were not readers, but at the same time, the people basically were activists and they identified with successful action. The Black Panther Party's program is a program that can be instituted immediately with what we just finished talking about was certain minor reforms. This country is not even prepared to give minor reforms. The Black Panther program can be interpreted on a level where it's simply a reform program. And for instance, we demand that the police that acts as an occupying army in our community withdraw, and the community be able to set up a judicial structure and also a police structure so that we will have people safeguarding our community. We have respect and esteem for the black community. We demand that if we're going to have police in our community, that they live in our community. We constantly suffer from from unfair trials. Whenever we're brought to trial, we're tried by not members of our peer group, as the Constitution gives us a right, but we're tried by an all-white middle-class jury with sometimes one black middle-class person in the jury who doesn't understand the community either. We demand that we have a court structure that's controlled by our community. And these are some little things that small reforms that the power structure are unwilling to give. But within our platform, as I said, that it can be interpreted on a level, we realize that the reforms won't give liberation, but in the platform and the 10 points of what we believe, that then we express the desire for a complete change in the structure, and we point out the oppressive, seemingly innate oppressive things in the structure as it exists. We make a point that we want all black prisoners released from the many jails and prisons. This seems very radical, but in fact we realize that about 99% or I think I would be safe to say 100% of the black prisoners haven't received a fair trial, and that the Constitution of the United States already gives us a right to have this, and the power structure doesn't even follow its own Constitution. So this is why that we can expect really little from the power structure when the power structure doesn't even live up to the things that it promises and gives to the rest of the citizens in the country. So black people are slowly, well, up until this point they were slowly, now they're rapidly realizing the shortcomings of the structure, and they are going about to make a change, and it's happening now from the grassroots level. People seem to attempt to divide the two movements into two separate categories. They talk about the peace movement, the nonviolent movement, and then they talk about the crazy radical black militants. You know, they seem to think that they're two different tactics that are being used, and I disagree with this. I think that all of the things that have been gained, and that's very little, that has been gained through the nonviolent or the peace movement has only been gained because there was a latent force behind them. And of course at the negotiating table, and when these nonviolent demonstrators will go down, the power structure, they're not complete fools. They see that there's unrest, and that these people who are participating or behind them, the power structure looks over their shoulder and they see destruction behind. They see the masses of the people prepared to go up in arms. Many people in the so-called nonviolent movement, they don't realize what the power structure is seeing when it looks over their shoulder. And maybe they don't see it because, after all, they have their backs to the masses. And the power structure, they're facing the masses by facing the nonviolent person. Only he's seeing more than the nonviolent person is seeing. He's seeing that if the things that King talked about, if they're not gained, then there's someone behind King who happens to be illiterate, uneducated, and who understands only one program, and that's the program of physical force. And these are the people that we represent.
And yet you are using every method which is open to you. I presume that's the reason why you are engaging, in fact, in electoral politics, as exemplified by the coalition with the Peace and Freedom Party.
The black militants most of them haven't ever divorce the, they've understood that the apparently two movements, but as we see it, it always has been one, and it's one now. But what has happened? Suddenly, those people that the power structure was were looking at and very afraid of have become somewhat articulate. And they now can not only deliver the force, they also can express their desires. And I think that Malcolm X pointed it out very well when he referred to Martin Luther King and later, just before his assassination, where he was attempting to unify the complete black movement, and that he realized that King wasn't asking really for anything different than he was asking for, that the only difference was that he realized, Malcolm X realized, that the power structure would only change when some force was even either inflicted or a force was threatened to be inflicted if black people didn't get what they want. So at this point, the black militants are now voicing and articulating the grievance of the grassroots of the community, who they happen to be a part of. In the past, that the nonviolent movement was always led by the middle class blacks, who were interested in a black middle class problem, up until the later days of Martin Luther King. You could see a more of a merge that Martin Luther King was making with the black militant, because then he started to realize where the real strength was, and the real strength was in the political power that we have, and the political power is in the grassroots of the community, who don't believe in negotiating, and they need representatives to negotiate for them, as far as articulate a program and articulate their desires. But they are the activists, and they are the people who cause all change, and they're the makers of world history, as they've always been.
Do you feel that that you have any appreciable hostility on the part of the black bourgeoisie? That's one of the things which is frequently said, is that there are many frightened black people who have got jobs and so on. Do you feel that they in fact identify with your program, even if they don't do so openly, or that there is a genuine cleavage within the black community as there is within the white community between those people who approve the system and those people who disapprove the system?
As far as the black bourgeoisie is concerned, that the first thing we have to realize is they only represent about 2% of all black people in the country. Most black people are in the black lower class, and that sometimes the black middle class sees their interests as a little different than the interests of most black people. Of course, some of them have very good jobs, a very high income, and are they're in privileged positions, black and exploited and discriminated against, but yet their position is somewhat privileged when you attempt to correlate it or relate it to the general masses of black people. And I think they are afraid of their position many times because they know who's in control, and that's the white power structure. So some of the demands that we make, that some members of the black bourgeoisie will speak against, even though in the long run that it will be beneficial to them, because the change will occur whether they like it or not, because they don't represent the majority of the people, of the black people. But I think that the black bourgeoisie can be related to the historical privileged position of the house Negro. Even though we're enslaved, that the house Negro, or the house servant, received a little better treatment than the Negroes that worked in the fields, and or the black people that worked in the fields. And their interest sometimes was a little different because they were afraid that they too might be put out into the field if they didn't go along with the program of the house master, who was the white people who owned the house. Sometimes when the field black people would attempt to make changes as far as burning the master's house down, they would be snitched off by the house Negro. This didn't happen in all cases. In some cases, the house Negroes made certain potions to poison the master. And I think that this is true even today, that there's some black people in the black bourgeoisie who realize that they are enslaved as we are, and they're attempting to put poison into the system. Generally speaking, the black bourgeoisie will have to be put into line by the masses of black people. And the black bourgeoisie only exists in this privileged position because of the efforts and the suffering of black people. We have what you call universal tokenism, where black people can, if you're privileged enough to get an education, and this providing that your family has a certain economical status to start with, that you can get out of college and even get a master's degree, and you're promised you can get any job that's open practically. You can even get high-ranking jobs in private businesses. And this is to deceive the masses of black people to say, look at this man, that he's black and that he has an education and he has this job. And you could do the same thing. So you should stop pressing so hard upon us, and you shouldn't cause revolts because it's your own fault that you don't have the education. And you could have it, and we don't really discriminate because we have a black man here. And black people have been disillusioned by this tactic, but now we see that just employing one or two black people doesn't mean that all black people, if they receive an education and if they had an income high enough, or have an income high enough and then have an education, they could have this position inside of the power structure, that they realize that the power structure is unable to employ all of its people. It's a matter of fact against the whole logic of the whole system, because the system, if it doesn't have anyone to exploit, then it becomes threatened from within, from the people who are working, because they see that they don't have control, and then they just demand higher demands for to get an equal share of the wealth. In other words, that they see that where they're making $100 a week, that the owners are making $1,000 a week, but yet they're doing all the work that are producing the wealth for these private owners. The black people realize that the first thing is not to get an education, because poor black people they're too concerned about just irking out a living to eat each day, to clothe themselves, to pay money or have the leisure time to get an education. So the first thing is not an education. The first thing is full employment with a high standard, so that then we can afford to educate our children, and we'll have the leisure then to indulge in certain academic pursuits, so that we become very cultivated. So the first thing is, first things first is full employment. And many people in the black bourgeoisie, maybe they are deceived that black people who can hardly eat each day can sacrifice a member of the family to go to school. I think this is somewhat an absurd conclusion to reach, that the first thing is to straighten out the economical system.
Well, many of the programs which are suggested by people in the white community are things which might help a few individuals. I gather that you would prefer the interested members of the white community to address themselves to the basic structure rather than to try to improve conditions slightly by various types of reform. That kind of thing, I think, is something that many people are interested in trying to do, and with good will. But it doesn't seem to me that what you say adds up to being that would be what would be really acceptable. In other words, you can go into the ghetto and you can open day nurseries, or you can get a better medical clinic, or you can do some of these things. These are things that I think many people in the white community would be happy to try to do something about, and that there are probably people in the black community who might welcome this. But this is not really what you're talking about. Or do you think that the two things can work together? Do you think that in the effort to try to improve the surface manifestations of our society, that people learn something which would lead them to agree with your point of view?
I think that black people welcome any solution, a short-term solution that will ease the burden. And the Black Panther Party more or less attempts to interpret the desire of the community and then organize their desires in some systematic fashion so that we could set up an administration to give them what they want. Now, the Black Panther Party welcomes any change in the community. For instance, if someone interested person wanted to give money to the black community so that we can set up our day nurseries, hospitals, and so forth, that we welcome this effort because it wouldn't even be in a counter-revolutionary fashion as it is in some other countries that I can imagine, that where many progressive or revolutionary people would speak against this for the simple reason it tends to give the people the illusion that they can gain their freedom through these short-term reforms. In this country, black people are so frustrated. Black people have been enslaved so long until no one can give them, no one can pay them off or with a short reform to satisfy us. If this were the case, then the poverty programs would have stopped all insurrections. But the poverty program has not stopped the rebellions. Even though, as far as the poverty program is concerned, that we don't speak directly against the poverty program, we educate the community and show them where the poverty program will not liberate us. The poverty program is just what it says it is. It's a program for poverty, and it's a program to perpetuate poverty. Even though a few people, a handful of people in the community are, quote, helped, it ends up that the people who don't need the help are getting most help out of it, and these are the people who are highly educated, and they're getting the incomes, the large incomes from the poverty program. As far as the black community is concerned, it wouldn't stifle our liberation move for some interested people who happen to be naive to come into the community and to give monies for little reforms. A few of our people will be helped, but the mass of our people will not be deceived that this is the answer to the problem. The answer is more basic than that. The answer is a complete change, because we know that these little reforms won't give full employment. We know that these reforms will not make decent housing for all of our people, and that because it won't make decent housing for all our people, then the revolution will go on. If it did make decent housing, full employment, justice in the courts, then of course it wouldn't be a reform, then it would be a revolutionary thing, and we would welcome it wholeheartedly, because it would not only save many white people from destruction, it would save many black people.
In this community, there has been a great deal of attention focused on this whole situation, partly because of your case, partly because of the Hutton case, the Eldridge Cleaver case. I personally have had a sort of hope, I can't put it more than that, that this area is more aware and has become increasingly aware down through the years, particularly the younger people in the community, beginning with the Huac riots, the FSM, the draft resistance movement, all sorts of growth which has taken place in this community. I'm told by people who visit this part of the world from other parts of the United States that there is a perceptible difference in the whole political climate of this area. Right now, there are white people, not only the coalition with the Peace and Freedom Party, which developed at their conference, but unorganized white people who are asking, and meaning it, I think, what they can do. Do you feel there is a possibility that in this area, at least, we might be able to bring about some of the basic changes which would be necessary to have a civilized community, and that it could possibly be done through political and organizational and educational means? I mean, what is the role of the white person in this community who genuinely wishes to align themselves with the struggle for black liberation in the full sense of that word?
In the first place, I would like to start again and make something quite clear, because people refuse to accept it as a truth that I think it's very true. And the first thing is, let's get what politics is about again. Our definition is that politics is war without bloodshed, and war is politics with bloodshed. Even though politics has its particular characteristics that are peaceful in nature, when these characteristics are exhausted and the people who are demanding don't get what they want, then politics is continued. And it usually ends up into a physical conflict, which is called war, and which is a very political action, because the people are still trying to achieve their liberation, freedom, and justice. So I make no division between the politics of war and the other characteristics of politics. I think at this point that the black people over a few hundred years have exhausted the peaceful means. I think that we've gained everything we can possibly gain through peaceful means, and that now it's at a point where white people, if they don't think they've exhausted the means to bring about change, then they could put pressure upon the controllers of the means of production and the government officials to stop their oppressive ways, to revolutionize the government, to change the system completely so that the people would be in control of the means so we can employ ourselves. And also within this, it's very complicated in this country, because it's my belief that black people have a right to secede the Union and be a free republic if they so desire. One of the demands that we make is that after we gain the necessary power, which is part of our program, matter of fact, that we will ask for a plebiscite set up by the UN, and we'll have the UN advisors to come in to see that black people get a vote, and we will vote as a people to see if we want to stay a part of this country or not. We've never been treated fairly in this country. We've never received justice in this country. And many black people are disillusioned with the position that we have here, and that we might want some land of our own. But as far as white people who are conscious of the shortcomings of the this structure, they can aid the revolutionary people of the black community. And they can also put pressure upon the government and upon the private owners to change the system. And when I say change the system, I'm also including that I don't believe that the private owner can actually give full employment. Number one, because of his profit motive, that he's only going to try to get richer and to pay the people as little as possible. So I think that they have a tremendous job on their hands to change the basic economical structure of the country. And I don't know any time in history where a government has been changed where you had a private profit motive there, and suddenly they changed and became humanitarian and instituted a socialized government. And that the Black Panther Party advocates the people owning the means of production, the people owning the housing, or controlling the housing through elected administrators. And so that then these administrators would be at the mercy of the people, and the administrators will organize the people's wealth in such a manner where the people enjoy a high standard. I don't think that there's ever been a time in history where this change has have come through any peaceful means, although I would like to see this happen for the first time in this country.